cliffcentral.com.
Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's, and they managed to fire up our appetites, and they managed to give us the sustenance and the satisfaction we need when it comes to filling our stomachs. Now, to fill your brain, here is Justice Malala. What do we have in the Burning Platform today? Where do you even want to begin?
Did you see yesterday one of the listeners tweeted us saying, "Oh my word, where are you going to start? What are you going to talk about tomorrow?" And I had to sit there and I look around. I mean, there is so much going on. But I have to tell you guys, today we're starting late here. We started at what, 10 past?
It's all right, we can get around.
Yeah.
But we got time.
You know, imagine being Brian Molefe.
Oh.
First day. That's how I felt when I thought, no, I'm not going to talk about Brian Molefe. First day back at work on Monday. Now, you know, see, I don't know about you, but the guy arrived at work at 4 a.m. So if I hear you complaining ever again about starting early...
That was just so that you could avoid, like, the five people left in COPE at the gate. Goodness.
The five COPE members and the seven DA members who arrived at 8 a.m. probably. Oh, we're going to stop Brian Molefe. No way, not seven people. He got that 4 a.m. But you have to ask yourself what's going on here and why he was so desperate to get back and get back inside. Because what's emerging this week about the extent of Eskom's involvement with the Gupta family, Eskom's involvement with passing cash to the Gupta family, mm-hmm. is just extraordinary. And I have to say, you know, we talk a lot on this show about people being accountable, about corruption. And some people like to tweet us and say, yeah, you know, you're being negative and so forth. But yesterday in Parliament, there was an interesting thing. It emerges that the SABC doesn't have money to put petrol into cars so that people can go, journalists can go and cover stories.
Wow.
They don't have money to pay for licensed discs so that when a cop stops you and checks you, that your car is roadworthy. And that is because when we say these state-owned entities have to be run properly,
mm-hmm.
and people say, oh, no, leave Saudi, and they go and, you know, protest there, and it's like, oh, King Saudi, he's so amazing, da-da-da.
Yeah.
People are not being paid. Independent producers at the SABC are not being paid for months and months on end. Now, this guy is supposed to be, oh, the hero of
local production.
Local production,
music, yeah.
Oh, black musicians, this and that. Well, the same people who are not being paid today are the same people who he claims he's done so much for.
Mm-hmm.
So, getting back to Eskom, what is happening at Eskom is that, one, we know now, and Ngwako Ramahlodi told us on Monday, Tuesday, that essentially Glencore was squeezed and squeezed and squeezed to sell optimum coal to the Guptas. We know that Brian Molefe gave them more than 567 million rand to go and do it. So you give guys money to buy a mine so that they can sell you coal. And essentially, Eskom, it is clear now, was used as a piggy bank by companies and the Guptas and so forth, from the evidence that's emerged. Today, the story is running from Amabungani, the investigative unit, that one of these Gupta-linked companies, without any contract, without doing any work, sent an invoice. Now, Mabale, don't fall off your chair. But sent an invoice of 266 million rand to Eskom, saying, for services rendered, will you pay this?
Guess what, service, what happened? What services?
Professional services.
Okay, yeah.
And they paid it. They sent another one. I think it was 134 million rand. And it was paid. So I don't know what you guys are doing here, Sia, starting at 6 a.m. When
idiots.
You could just send in an invoice.
Yeah, really.
Come on now.
Come on now. See, I do better. Send an invoice.
So Brian, okay, so Brian was taken out of ESCOM.
Yeah.
He was crying on TV, said how bad he felt about how things had gone wrong.
Yeah.
Then he was given a job in Parliament because they were saying he should be finance minister, that side.
Mm.
Then, of course, they didn't prevail to get him to become finance. So, so they looked at Brian sitting there. He looked very forlorn in Parliament. He didn't really know what he was there for. He thought he had...
I like great, that word, forlorn.
He had great hopes and aspirations for the future.
Yes.
Those were dashed against the rocks. So what does he do? He doesn't even tell the ANC he's not going to go to Parliament anymore. He's taking an instruction from someone else somewhere else. He works for the ANC ostensibly, but he's out.
Yeah.
Suddenly, before you know it, at 4 a.m. in the morning on Monday, he's back at ESCOM to try and smooth over some criminal deals with the Guptas.
Yes.
So is that his job again?
That's basically, you've got the story down, Pat. That is, the play was, we're going to give you a big piggy bank to play with. And that didn't work out at National Treasury.
Mm.
Let's not forget, guys, the ANC in Parliament didn't even know what was going on. Suddenly, the Northwest ANC says, we are sending Comrade Brian to Parliament. From what I understand, even that there is still an investigation, a proper one, to be made about whether Brian Molefe was a member of the ANC in the Northwest at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because if ANC members, many ANC members in the Northwest are to be believed, and members of that Hartbeespoort branch are to be believed, the man was never, ever a branch member. And let's not forget that the Centurion branch also claimed that, no, he was our member.
Yeah.
So he had, you gotta love him. He loves the ANC, man.
Huh?
He joins wherever he can. Anyway, so he's a member of the Centurion branch and the Hartbeespoort branch. Plus, many, many people are asking questions about those membership forms that we saw that were paid in at the FNB somewhere in Hartbeespoort, whether they were the real thing or they were fake or whatever. So he gets hustled into Parliament ahead of everyone else. So Ben is on the list. We know, you know, there's a list that you vote for, basically, when you vote at national election of people. You know that if Justice kills over and dies, Ben is number three. So Ben comes up. And then, you know, Sia is number five. And then Sia goes to number four and waits. And he's waiting. Suddenly, there's a guy called Brian.
Gets parachuted in.
Parachuted in. And Sia's waiting for his turn. And it's like, no, it's not your turn. Go back to the back of the queue.
Terrible. For Sia, this is a major, major problem.
He's waiting there to earn his 80,000 rand a month.
Sure.
Okay? Yeah. So he gets hustled there. And Brian didn't go there, I think, because he loves the ANC so much. He went there because he thought he was going to be finance minister. It didn't work out. And so, oops, go and defend whatever we've done at ESCOM. And that's why he didn't even have the decency to say to Jackson Mthembu, the ANC chief whip, to even say, Baba, it's been fantastic these 3 months that I've been in Parliament. Because that's not what he was there for. He was there to be sworn in and then transported to Pretoria, become finance minister, and Bob's your uncle. Let all these things that the Guptas are doing.
By the way,
so essentially, let me just say this one sentence because I want to say it. South Africa is not being run by the ANC. It's not being run by Jacob Zuma. It's being run by the Gupta family.
Right.
This is clear from the evidence that has been given, and the man says he's prepared to go in front of a court of a judicial inquiry under oath and swear to this. Nwako Ramatlhodi this week, Mqebisi Jonas last year, many, many other people who've said the same thing. Essentially,
Fakey Mentor, lots of others.
Lots and lots of others. This is a gangster state run by one family, which is in control of Jacob Zuma, who has stolen the ANC and is now running it, running this gangster state from the union buildings. This is what it is. And ESCOM is clear, incontrovertible evidence that this is what's happening here.
Jesus.
That's what it is. Welcome.
Wow.
Welcome.
You did say this, though. I mean, this is not really news to you.
No, we
said this a year and a half ago on this burning platform.
Exactly. And we just need to say, the point is that there are things that we can do, and people march and so forth and so forth. But let's not stop talking about these things, because if we stop pointing them out, we will become, ESCOM will become, and I assure you it will become, like the SABC, where there will be no petrol to do things, where there will be basically things will ground to a halt. We can't afford that. So we have to continue to point these things out, continue to expose this malfeasance and rot that exists. But the Brian Mulliffe story is a tragedy. It's a it illustrates how far we've come from Nelson Mandela to what we are today. And that
how come, I mean, maybe we should just stop and give credit to the Guptas for taking advantage of how stupid we are. I mean, if you were them, you'd be patting yourself on the back, kissing yourself in the mirror and pinching your chubby flanks, going, I can't believe how lucky I am. I can't believe how clever we are and how dumb the people of South Africa are. These people are so dumb. Because they found a way of turning the state into their own profit center. What a genius move.
Yeah,
this family should be in charge. They're so much cleverer than us. We've got the government we deserve. Crooks. Come on, Justice. Am I wrong?
I'll give it to them. Look, one of the things about people like, you know, the people in this studio is that we see our framework, our constitution, as, you know, we built it, we wrote it so that Sia can have the rights and responsibilities that he has. Some people look at it and say, actually, that's a let me exploit that little space that exists there, and so forth and so forth. And they've exploited that space to essentially take the ANC from the centrality of our society to the margins. And they bought themselves Jacob Zuma. You've got to give it to them for that, for criminal intent and criminal mind. It is it's a genius move. But because
they don't have a responsibility to us. They're not even South African citizens. They don't have to care about us. They are just business people.
Yeah.
Jacob Zuma is meant to care about us. He's meant to have been voted into office to do his job according to what the people of South Africa need. Those are the people we should be putting in jail.
Yeah. Barack Obama likes quoting, I think it's Martin Luther King Jr., that he's used it many times before, and a lot of people use it these days. The arc of the arc of justice bends to the arc of something bends towards justice, towards the right thing, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The arc of history bends towards. I think
I'll look it up for you.
But it's a beautiful.
He even had it put onto the carpet of the Oval Office.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. And it's basically a code that says
the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice.
That's the one. Thank you, Sia. And it's that long. It's about time that you might think you're smart and clever, and that you've you know, the 54 million South Africans are stupid, and you've outplayed them, you've outgunned them, and you know, you're sitting pretty with your houses and your ministers in your pocket and your houses in Dubai and so forth. But time is a beautiful thing. I'm always amazed when I think of people like Idi Amin dying in Saudi Arabia, of people so scared of their own people that they flee and end up in exile somewhere because they stole and stole and stole from their own people. And I think you might think you're cleverer than all South Africans today, but in 5 years' time and in 10 years' time, those stupid people that you take for granted, the electorate, they'll run you out of town. They will find you, they will hound you, And one day on that list of people that you started off with, Gareth, asking who should we put, who if I were the ICC, one day one of our leaders will find themselves on that list for stealing from people. That is what's happening in Venezuela. That is what is happening in many other places. It's 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, but time is a powerful thing. And people mustn't forget that. It comes back.
All right, I'm going to hope you're right here. So what you're talking about is karma. But let's, this is interesting. I mean, clearly there's a lot more to be discovered here, but you're saying incontrovertible evidence, if you look at ESCOM, of who's really in charge of the country.
Yeah.
So let's talk quickly about the battle for the soul of the South African police services. There's the fight between Pahlane and IPED. There's Paul O'Sullivan. There's Burning in Tlemeza and Fikile Mbalula. I mean, what's going on here? If you were a policeman, wouldn't you just throw your arms up in the air and say, I don't even know who's in charge anymore?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this week, I'm sure you guys have talked about it. We talk about it. And for me, one of the saddest things about whether the Karabo Mokoena story and the many other stories around is that they speak to a whole bunch of things. Oh. But one of the things that they speak to is that many young, old women arrive at police stations and say, I've been beaten up, battered by my partner, by my boyfriend, and so forth. Mm. And the police say, oh, you know, go and tell him to come here. Or they don't do anything about it. There's a pictures of a young woman, I think her name is Buki, on Twitter doing the rounds about how 3 months after she was attacked, beaten up by this man, there isn't even a case number. Now, if you see those pictures, it's horrific. So you say to yourself, why do we have these crises of law and order, of justice being served properly to ordinary people?
Not being served. Justice denied.
Absolutely. And it's because what's happening at the very bottom of the police service, where police should be running to help that young woman, but they can get away with that because at the very top, the acting National Police Commissioner is alleged to have taken bribes, is alleged to have done all sorts of things, and this is a matter that should have the police minister, that should have the whole nation exercised. The man should be suspended today, and the matter should be cleared up very quickly so that we can move on. Now, if it's not happening, if the people who are investigating him, as Robert McBride alleges, are being investigated themselves to intimidate them, are being tapped, their phones are being listened to, you have to start saying, well, actually, why do we have 159,000 police men and women? Yeah. Maybe that these are just jobs. I just pitch up. I do my 8-hour shift. There's no passion. I don't exist to, you know. So increasingly, you look at the images you keep on seeing of people being hijacked or this or that, and you say, where's the state? Where are the police? And the state of our police is essentially that it's in a mess. We don't even talk about it anymore. Do you know that we have a police commissioner in South Africa?
Mm.
Her name is Ria Pierre.
She's been paid since Marikana.
Since Marikana.
And she's been sitting at home.
Exactly. The police
commission,
full pay.
And commissioners aren't cheap.
No, they don't. Before that, the police commissioner, gone. Before that, the police commissioner, jailed. Before that, this country, I don't know where the police services is. So when you talk about how am I going to find, firstly, and then arrest, and then convict a rapist, where are the services that would make the evidence stronger?
I'm
sorry. They work?
I'm sorry, women of South Africa, you're on your own.
No, it's terrible. So we're not fixing the problem at the top, and we're not fixing the problem basically of the whole entity. And what you saw on Tuesday in Parliament, when you had Robert McBride, the IPED head, and Khomotso Phahlane, the acting police commissioner, is just illustrates the trouble that we're in. Because in that committee meeting, the safety and security committee meeting, you had Phahlane saying, yes, IPED is captured by Paul O'Sullivan and so forth and so forth. McBride saying, this guy is a bad guy, he shouldn't be, and he's intimidating police investigators and so forth and so forth. And they started making allegations about each other. That one is doing this, that one has money in his boot and so forth and so forth. Quite frankly, who is making sure that the police do their jobs when they're acting police commissioner is busy fighting off allegations? We are in trouble.
Trouble. And the police minister is just grandstanding about how he's the sheriff in town. I mean, has crime not gone up since he became police minister?
I loved his response to what was happening in Parliament. His spokesperson said, the minister was watching it on TV, and he will respond soon enough. Well, I'm still waiting for that response because, quite frankly, it's a mess.
Isn't it time we just admitted that we have the most low-functioning government we've had since freedom?
I think this government, if you think about it, Faith Mutambi oversaw the collapse of the SABC. Yeah. She has been given a big job. Mm. She is now in charge of the public service. Yeah. Not just an aspect of it, the whole of it now. So what's she going to do? She's going to wreck the public service. That's what she's going to do. Essentially, state-owned entities have been, how shall I put it, have been hollowed out. If you want to really reflect on the capability of the state, it's worth thinking about Monday. On Monday, it was the last day of Lungisa Fuzile. Lungisa Fuzile was the Director General of the National Treasury.
Very capable, very adept.
Amazing
very
human being.
Qualified human being who had qualities that may have been the kind of qualities we would want in a finance minister.
Exactly. Lungisa Fuzile has been at National Treasury for 22 years.
You know, when we talk about black excellence,
that like, is, you know,
the
excellent.
These supposed progressives are talking about.
This is a man who should be, would be happily become Reserve Bank governor, would become anything. He gave his life, his entire professional career to the state. He has left. He left with one of his deputies, Andrew Donaldson. I expect that the other deputy, Ismail Momoniat, will also leave, because these are the people who, you'll remember, the Guptas gave a list to Mcebisi Jonas and said, if you take the 600 million rand bribe, when you get back to the office, make sure that Fuzile, Donaldson, Momoniat, and Brown get out of the way. So it's three down, one to go now on that list. And so you look at the most capable people being kicked out of parliament, of the civil service, and absolutely the bottom of the barrel being scraped and brought in to take over. And so you talk about capability of the state. I think we're going through a period when a lot of our entities, a lot of our state departments are run by people like Faith Mutambi. And we know what she's capable of. An ANC minister, Ayanda Dlodlo, has just taken over at communications. The first thing she did was to say, why have we defied the ANC for 4 years on encryption of set-top boxes? And immediately changed that policy. Because for 4 years, Faith Mutambi, and we have to ask why she has been defying her own party's policy and going with a policy that is going to favor.
Do we know?
The Guptas.
Can we suspect? Oh, the Guptas.
The
oh,
Guptas okay. are part of the...
So again, she's on their payroll.
Well, I mean, she's got to tell us if she's not, because her actions and communications were clearly about enriching one family. So, you know, you have to ask yourself, if we're elevating that person and getting rid of people like
Fuzile.
Andile Fuzile, Lungisa Fuzile, then we've got a problem here. Is there some good news we can talk about?
Please.
I don't know, Justice.
please, can we talk? Where's the good news?
Look, so, I just have to ask, is there a law that permits a country to kick someone out of their country? I mean, if the rest of us, you know, in our numbers said we really don't want the Guptas here, is there a law that allows for such a case?
Yeah, there must be. There must be something we can do about these Guptas. I mean, we don't want them here. Nobody wants them here.
No, lots of people want them here.
The ones who are on their payroll.
Black first, yeah. Land first.
Oh. Yeah, black first, land first. They want them here.
These guys want them.
Yeah.
I think it's time to schedule an interview with Andile Mqhitama.
Yeah.
What for? He'll come in with a script provided by President Atul.
Yes, exactly.
Look, it's comical, but it is kind of frightening to take a step back from it all, to be unemotional about it, and to see that this family have completely and utterly taken control of a bunch of obviously very compliant and pliable and people totally lacking in agency, who will take money from wherever the money comes from.
Yeah. Can I maybe, as we go towards ending off, maybe there is a positive aspect to it. Guys, you know, so you take Des van Rooyen.
Yes.
Des van Rooyen clearly came in, coached and everything to do the bidding of the Guptas. Museben Zizwane, the mining minister, clearly, totally, and the evidence is there, that he was there to make sure they got their mines, they got their licenses, and that they got to essentially run Eskom. Those are people who, Faith Mutambi, you can see that clique of people who go to the Guptas compound for the Diwali celebrations, all that. Those are people who work for essentially who are not for the people of South Africa but for others. But I think we're going through a period of huge tumult, a period when some people in the ANC are standing up, people in society are standing up. So it's not all doom and gloom. There are great positive aspects. The church leaders are standing up. Civil society, Section 27, all these NGOs are standing up. All the people that David Mahlobo says, yeah, these people are working with foreign governments to topple the democratic state. No, all that. All these people are standing up and saying, this fine, no further. So to your question, Mabale, about is there... a law that can say, you know what, Gareth, it's been lovely, but can you find out. A new country for yourself?
You gotta go,
my man.
Get out.
Yeah.
We don't have such a law, but if I decide to move to Zimbabwe and I gain citizenship of Zimbabwe and I start doing things in Zimbabwe that are anti-Zimbabwe, that are essentially aimed at destroying what Zimbabwe is and why I moved there, surely my citizenship can be withdrawn. And so you will find, for example, if you commit a crime in a country which has welcomed you, they will probably either jail you there or send you to your home country to serve your sentence there. If there is a conviction on corruption or other matters, say of a member of the Gupta family, perish the thought, then I think that sort of thing would kick in. But no, you can't just send off Gareth to exile.
But we have ample evidence at this point to at least lay charges of corruption.
The big problem here, yes, one of us should.
Yeah.
The big problem here, clearly, is that you lay the charges with the SAPS. Is the SAPS...
And then
the SAPS takes the case docket. Let's say you find that the SAPS, and you know, I've got nephews and other relatives who work for the SAPS. So let's say you find one of those Malala kids running around, and they investigate this commercial crime very well, brilliantly, and they take the docket straight through to the NPA, where Sean Abrahams says, yes, we've got to make a decision to prosecute.
And then?
So Sean.
Sean the sheep. Sean gets a call that goes like this. Sean's sitting in his office at the NPA, and the call goes,
hello, Sean. It's Jacob. There's a docket on the table in front of you. I want you to burn it, please.
And so that docket straight goes straight to burning in Clemens. I'm sorry, that was a lame joke even for me. Anyway, so you know, I mean, think of burning Clemens, whose people went to SARS to investigate allegedly Pravin Gordhan, and they lock up a guy in his office, well, in the boardroom. And the guy films them locking him in. These are not investigators. These are just thugs, okay? Yeah. So I don't think they're capable of actually nailing someone on a sophisticated commercial crime, first. Secondly, I think the prosecution service has been hollowed out to make sure that Jacob Zuma doesn't go to jail. And therefore... many of his cronies and friends will not be prosecuted. So that case coming to court is the chances are slim. There is perhaps a possibility, and I'm still waiting to see exactly what Harry Nair is doing. But it will be interesting to see whether this private prosecution route where it takes South Africa. Essentially, a private prosecution is someone like him or a lawyer of that stature who will say, I'm not going to wait for the NPA to do this. I'm going to take it to court myself.
Yeah.
And that would be an interesting development. I think on the Optimum Coal Tegeta deal, which Eskom basically gave money to the Guptas for them to buy a mine and then sell coal to them, I think that's an excellent case of collusion, corruption, and all sorts of other things going on there. That might be one to start with.
Wow.
But I'm not sure that Sean Abrahams would be the person to... given his behavior, I don't think
I'm wondering. You know, you can get a pretty good salary if you're a minister in government, and you can get a pretty good salary if you're a director general or a NPA head or whatever. How much do you think the Guptas are shelling out every month to keep all these people in their thrall? Because it's just money. There's no loyalty here. There's no other extraneous force like, oh, well, the ANC liberated us. We've been part of the ANC. They're my family. To turn your back on the ANC, you'd have to multiply your whatever your salary is by at least 3, right? You would think. And perhaps for some of them, maybe 1.5 or 2. But there's a lot of money coming out of the Guptas too. We talk about the money going in. So how much do you think they're shelling out to keep this network of patronage happy? Because if you miss out on one payment for one of these people, the whole thing collapses. It's very tenuous on their part too. If we could put a stop to their business and interrupt the cash flow, and the network of patronage doesn't get its food, I think the whole thing collapses.
No, absolutely. But think about the money that's going in. So if
they
we
must be paying a lot out though, Justice. There's a lot of people they have to take care of, you know?
If you think about the invoicing of Eskom by Trillion Capital and Regiments Capital, which are linked to them, an invoice of 266 million. I'm hyperventilating.
But that'll cover what? Four ministers, the president. It's not enough. They've got the Premier League to make sure that they still pay. There's a lot of people, and there are more people being added every day because you've got to keep things going. And sometimes someone says, no, we're not going to do this. And you say to them, oh, you're going to do it. No, we're going to go and tell everybody. Okay, we'll pay you. It gets expensive.
It gets expensive. But everyone who gets paid is providing a service. And that service provides money to go through the system.
Yeah.
So
I wonder what the balance sheet looks like, is all I'm saying.
It's massive. It's massive. And I think part of the reason why people like Lungisa Fuzile, people like Cebisi Jonas, Pravin Gordhan, is that the Financial Intelligence Center sees all those transactions. So those 72 transactions that are in the court case and so forth, that is perhaps just the tip of the iceberg. What else can you see if you're at the Financial Intelligence Center as money flows in from Sia to Justice, Justice to Mabale, Mabale to Gareth, Gareth to Ben, and it just keeps on flowing and flowing? You start seeing a pattern of, oh, this one's getting money from government and it gets siphoned off to this one and so forth and so forth and so forth.
And but also, of course, these days you can't hide that kind of money. Like, it was fine in the 60s and 70s before the internet and electronic banking because you had to actually have the paper receipts, right?
Yes.
And sometimes they faded or they got lost or the building burnt down or what. Now, these records are stored in the cloud. You can access them anytime. We know exactly where money is going.
Yeah.
You can't hide this.
You can't hide it, and it stays. So the records don't get burnt.
Back to your karma thing, because I think we do have to leave people on a positive note. Mm. It might not be karma that saves us. It might be excellent record keeping and time. And you know, it might take us 5 to 10 years to put everybody in jail, but they're all going to go to jail.
They will go to jail. All this stuff, you know, I'm a big believer that things don't just stay as they are. Things turn. People stand up. People start saying, you know, Ngwakura Mahlodi was on the morning of last, I think it was not September, I think it was October. Ngwakura Mahlodi wrote an article and put it on the website of the Department of Mineral Resources. Later that afternoon, President Zuma called him and said, Baba, it's time for you to go. And that was it. He didn't have an idea about what was going on. He kept quiet. This year, that was a year and a half ago. So this year, he doesn't even get called. He goes home. At 10 o'clock, he gets into bed and has a nice sleep. He wakes up in the morning. His wife says, Baba, do you know that you've just been fired? He didn't even get a call saying, I don't. You know, it's not working out. It's, you know, it's just like...
It's not working out.
Nothing.
It's nothing. And here he is now telling us all kinds of things. Do you think that's all he knows? No. There is more. Do you think that fake mentor is done and dusted?
No.
No, there is more. So all this stuff is going to come out. It doesn't get less. It's going to get more. And what you're going to see is the evidence piling up until there is so much of it. Something's got to be done, and it will be done. Fantastic. So it's just a matter of time.
Let's just hold our breaths until then. Hope we survive it.
We will survive. It will be bumpy.
All right, Justice. Hey. Thank you very, very much.
Absolute pleasure.
The Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's. Every Thursday, Justice Malala comes in. By the way, the book's still on the shelves.
Book still on the shelves. I saw it sitting next to your book the other day. I thought that was so nice.
Do we?
I should have taken a picture.
Do we need to amend the title of your book to "We Have Already Begun Our Descent"?
I saw it at the most interesting place a few weeks ago. I was visiting Vilagazi Street.
Oh yeah.
And there were some street vendors there, and they were holding "Long Walk to Freedom," and then they were holding, you know, Justice Malala's book. I was like, look at that. Historic streets with historic people. Absolutely.
I love it.
They just hope they better be paying him his royalties.
Yeah.
It's not Hong Kong.
Hey. You open it up and it's like, what? No.
I love Vietnam is amazing. That, you know, you think of music, movies, everything being pirated, particularly in the East. But books are also just, I mean, I wanted to read this one book. I remember just a book about the Vietnam War. And I see a guy selling it on the street. And I buy it. And it's and then I open it. Inside, it starts with the last page of the real book.
No.
But it was Hong Kong. And I'm thinking, how did this happen? Books? I mean, books being... anyway,
all right,
that was my parrot book.
Thank you very much. Justice Malala back next week, Thursday, for more of The Burning Platform. Thank you, Nando's. CliffCentral.com.